Maybe it was all the talk about kidnapping. Or maybe I watched too many Twilight Zone episodes at an impressionable age. But even at 6 or 7, I remember being gripped sometimes by a feeling that things were on the verge of falling apart, and that it was my job, somehow, to hold them together. Sometimes, lying in my big queen bed with the cross-stitched "Now I lay me down to sleep" prayer above my head, I would dream that my family had been replaced by shape-shifting demons who meant to do me harm, or that grandmother's old car was sliding slowly into the lake near her house, the windows closed, going under. On those nights, I would wake up shivering under the quilt grandmother had sewn from heavy cotton and fabric scraps, and wonder if I, or anything, was real. Other times, when I was staying with Dad at his trailer in Hattiesburg, I would imagine that an invisible wall had descended between his room, where I was lying on the waterbed, trying to fall asleep, and the living room, where I could see Dad watching TV on the tattered couch. I stayed as still as I could, praying that whatever was in the room with me wouldn't notice I was there. All I had to do was be quiet and still. That feeling of anxiety, that nervous energy that marked me as a lifelong insomniac by the time I was 6 years old, would stay with me. It hung around long after my dad remarried, all the way through Houston and high school and drinking and scholarships and internships and boyfriends and jobs. At that age, it was just a low-level hum, the kind of thing that put me in constant motion, talking, arguing, demanding that everyone pay attention. "Watch me play piano," I would squeal, plinking out "Mary Had a Little Lamb" on the keys of my grandparents' out-of-tune piano. Or, "Look at this," followed by an attempt to pole vault across the room, followed by a visit to the hospital where Mama Opal worked. Joni, the woman Dad started dating when I was 5 or 6, was the first of his girlfriends who seemed willing to put up with my constant chatter. And she didn't make me tense the way his previous girlfriend, a swirl of shiny black hair named Jane, always had. Joni talked to me like I was a person, not a baby, and she listened to what I had to say. About the thriller video, a short story I was writing about elephants, the newspaper Mizba and I were going to publish about our school. When adults asked 6-year-old me what I was going to be when I grew up, that was an easy one. A journalist, like John Stossel on 2020 and the people who wrote the Meridian Star. Joni was Jewish, but that wasn't the only thing that made her exotic. Her parents, Susan and Barry, drank and sometimes even swore, and had been to faraway places like Dallas and New York City, and maybe even farther away than that. They belonged to the local country club, hung abstract art on their walls instead of needlepoint, and leased a new Cadillac every year. Fast forward through the wedding, held at that very country club, and my departure from Mississippi, an event that I experienced as a total surprise. Quick pause to see Papa Jesse wiping away tears as he told me to be careful, his favorite benediction. Fast forward all the way to my arrival in Houston, a noisy, unfamiliar place that smelled like exhaust and felt as humid as a wrung-out rag, and to our new home, a 2-story apartment in a gated complex that epitomized late 1970s suburban sprawl. Fast forward, for that matter, past the city of Houston itself. We lived in an apartment in the city for the first half of my 3rd grade year, long enough for my parents to decide that the city was no place to raise a child. This was the mid-80s, long before white flight reversed into gentrification, and we fled to Sugar Land, an area a few miles outside the city limits, where planned communities still bumped up against farmland and wildlife preserves. I had never been at the same school for more than a year, and now I was starting over again in the middle of the year. A gawky, gap-toothed beanpole in a school full of strangers.